Welcome, everyone. We're going to begin our meeting this evening for the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session, March 6, 2024. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have all seven members of council present tonight. If you'd please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mr. Standish will present upcoming meeting announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Water Utility Commission will hold their next regular session on March 11th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the Public Safety Personnel Retirement System Board meeting will be held on March 12th at 3 p.m. in the Kachina Conference Room. The Budget and Finance Commission will meet next on March 19th at 4 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then the next town council regular session is scheduled for March 20th at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. We'll go to council reports this evening. Councilmember Jones.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. We just had one more quick slide.
Mr. Standish.
That's all right. So we do have some more events coming up here in the month of March for the OV Path Forward. So if you're looking for more information, you're encouraged to attend those. And, of course, you can always find additional information at ovpathforward.com. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Admittedly, I got a little distracted there. I heard my mother's voice to sit up straight, Joe. So she's been gone for about 16 years. But Councilmember Jones-Ivy, council report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Reminders, grad night. They still need volunteers. And I want to again encourage you to please show up at CDO Saturday, March 9th. Their second workday will be March 23rd. They are the second and the fourth Saturdays of the month. This is a great opportunity to support our young people and having a safe, sane grad night. So please, let's help our young folks. Let them know that we support them. And if you'll please show up, it's in the T Building basement on the CDO campus. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Green.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple quick things. One is I was a guest at Sun City's board meeting, and it was pretty exciting to hear about all the things that are going on up there. And then this weekend, I think a lot of you may have heard the Heritage flight overhead from Davis-Monthan. They have the new F-22s there. They're just an astounding airplane. So it was really very exciting, and I'm glad we have DM in our neighborhood.
Thank you, Councilmember Green. That's for sure. Other announcements, reports? I'd like to briefly report my wife and I had the opportunity to participate in the Move Across Two Ranges Hiking Challenge. You may or may not be familiar with it. It's an annual event. We do that in partnership with the town of Marana. So the hikes are in the Tortolita Mountains and in the Catalina Mountains. There's four categories, 8 miles, 10 miles, 16, and 20. My wife and I hiked the 10 mile. And did it in about 3 hours, so we're particularly proud of that, but it was a great experience. Coming up April 6th, having to do with the fact that we're celebrating our 50th anniversary this year. April 6th, there will be a parade. If you haven't signed up to be a part of the parade, I certainly encourage you to do so. Parade entry forms are due this Friday, March 8th. We have about 48 folks that have signed up. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I hope you can join us. If you go to the Oro Valley webpage, you'll find the entry form there. With that, we'll go to Our town manager's report, Mr. Wilkins.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be brief. First announcement, we do have nine holes of golf at Push Ridge. So I wanted to thank all the staff that put in extra effort yesterday to make sure that happens, as well as Daryl from Indigo. But it was definitely a group effort to get the solution so quickly. Next meeting in 2 weeks, we'll bring you some options as far as how to make it a more permanent option.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wilkins. The agenda this evening will remain as posted. We'll go to call to audience. We have two cards this evening. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. When you come to the podium, if you would please state your name and whether or not you're a resident of Oro Valley. Jack Arnold.
Jack Arnold, I'm a resident of Oro Valley in Arizona, address 300 East Oro Valley Drive, Oro Valley. Have a problem with the town of Oro Valley trespassing on my property. I've been battling the town manager for 5 years to try to resolve this, and we can't do it. I've offered to sell it to him at a real discount from the fair market value. They refused, and it's creating a liability for me. People using this granite wash have some sort of an accident, even though the state of Arizona exonerates it. The plaintiff attorney will haul me into court at the same time. I'll be responsible. So I would request a special session with the city council or one member of the city council, see if we can't resolve this and get this to avoid a lawsuit. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wilkins, if we could schedule a meeting with Mr. Arnold, yourself, and myself.
Okay. Absolutely.
Thank you. Tim Terrace.
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, council members and staff. My name is Tim Terrace, and I am an Oro Valley resident. Over 4 years ago, the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene began an effort to grow its presence in our neighborhood. When it came before the Planning and Zoning Commission, it was rejected as incompatible for the neighborhood. We are grateful for that decision. Since then, they have been preparing a new concept, not yet formally submitted to the town, that expands their presence with a new 1,500-seat sanctuary. Many of the same issues, such as traffic, lighting, noise, and etc., remain the same. As longtime residents and neighbors, we hope that when presented to you, the council, your good judgment will prevail again and deny this concept. It is not logical to diminish the neighborhood quality of life for this project. Case in point, 14 of the adjoining property owners have opposed the church's intent in writing. Their latest submission, the churches will procedurally bypass the wishes of those affected most. Recently, myself and another pilot set out to circumnavigate the globe in honor of Army Air Service aviators who did it in 1924. Unfortunately, we ran afoul of South American bureaucracy, which forced us to abort our mission and return home. One of the items we carry on board is the flag of Oro Valley, to be bestowed upon the town when we return successfully from a new trip already in the planning. This will be our tribute to the community that we all enjoy and respect. Tens of thousands of dollars and hundreds of man hours have been exerted by the Concordia Buena Vista group to abate the church initiative. Many have had to reduce their financial giving to institutions and charities of their choice as a result. We are not running for any office or seeking any appointment. This unwanted situation has been thrust upon us, and we, the neighbors, will bear the effects. And finally, it is said that if common sense is so common, why don't more people have it? Common sense in this case dictates further expansion by the church does more permanent bad than temporary good. Thank you.
Anthony Ferrara.
My name is Anthony Ferrara, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I've got two items. This weekend, the fast swim team is hosting the Arizona State Swim Championships at the Oro Valley Aquatic Center. The mayor has graciously offered to come on Saturday morning to help put some medals over kids' heads. And if any of the rest of you would like to come on Sunday morning, that'd be great, 8 a.m. We're always looking for dignitaries to help us pass out. There are going to be 600 kids from across the state coming. Oro Valley shows very well at this event. It's a great event. 600 kids and their families. Second item is about the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. I won't go into my chicken speech, which you heard last week, but they are outrageously proposing to pave over 10 acres of desert with an impervious surface, which I think is technically allowed by the code. And I would just love to suggest that we look into setting reasonable limits that are based on the town's values, much like you were looking into setting limits on housing small animals on residential lots. I would love to have you guys, have the town staff, look into setting reasonable limits. Other town and municipalities have done so. Mesa, I looked quickly, Gilbert has. They set reasonable limits, 15%. Impervious surfaces, maybe 30%. Again, it's a reasonable limit. It's not the entire lot that you're allowed to just pave over, which apparently, as an oversight, maybe we are allowed to just pave over our lots in Oro Valley. So I would love to respectfully request that the town look into just the way we did with small animals, housing small animals, possibly setting reasonable limits on impervious surfaces. Thank you.
I have no other call to audience cards, so I'm going to close call to audience. We'll go to presentations. Mr. Standish.
Proclamation, National Procurement Month.
Thank you. I'd like to read the proclamation. National Procurement Month. Whereas public procurement professionals in the town of Oro Valley and other public and private organizations have tremendous influence on economic conditions in the United States, with a cumulative purchasing power running into the billions of dollars. And whereas National Institute of Governmental Purchasing, known as the Institute for Public Procurement, has designated the month of March as Procurement Month to expand awareness of the purchasing professional's role to government officials, the public, business, and corporate leaders. And whereas, in addition to purchasing goods and services, procurement enhances the organization by executing and cultivating working relationships between suppliers and departments within the town of Oro Valley. And whereas Professional Buyers Day on March 13th is the day we highlight the purchasing professional's role to government officials, the public, business, and corporate leaders, now therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of the Town of Oro Valley, do hereby proclaim the month of March as National Procurement Month 2024. And it's my great pleasure to present this proclamation this evening to our Chief Procurement Officer, Ms. Odesky. And so if Ms. Odesky would come forward, I'll come down and present this proclamation.
Hi, my name is Sherry Odesky. I'm the Chief Procurement Officer, and Kelsey Woody over here is our contract officer. And I just want to tell you a little bit about this procurement division here. We're responsible for obligating the town's financial resources with utmost integrity, fairness, professionalism, and in accordance with the industry-recognized best practices. Our customer groups include the community that the division serves, town departments, and the hundreds of vendors and service providers that we do business with the town. And as a 12-time recipient of the National Achievement of Excellence Award in Procurement, Oro Valley has been recognized by Public Procurement's gold standard of awards in the profession that requires sustained utilization of industry-recognized best practices. And we try to live up to this every day, and I see those trophies in my office, and it's over and above what normal people do. So we really do work hard for the community and the town departments as well. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate all that you do. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oops, aye. Any opposed? Nay. Thank you. The motion passes 7-0. We'll go to the regular agenda, item 1, Mr. Standish.
Resolution number R24-07, providing notice of intent to increase the potable water base rates, increase the potable water commodity rates, and increase the potable groundwater preservation fee for the Oro Valley Water Utility.
Our Water Utility Director, Mr. Abraham, will present this item. Welcome, Mr. Abraham.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Nice to be here to see you and council members and our audience. Tonight I'm just going to be presenting, this is the very beginning of any kind of a rate increase process, and it begins the public review period of our water rates analysis report. And it's the council tonight is not approving a change in our water rates. It's just beginning the process of the notice of intent to increase water rates. The adoption of the notice of intent is pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 9-511-01. Like I said, it begins the formal process to increase water rates. Adoption of a notice of intent does not increase or modify the water rates. It makes the 2024 water rates analysis report that I have here available for public viewing. It'll be placed in the town clerk's office, placed on the water utility website, as well as placed in the utilities lobby. It also directs the town clerk to publish the resolution in a newspaper of general circulation at least 20 days prior to the public hearing. It establishes a public hearing date for June 5th, 2024. I've been asked this year to touch on the important points that are in the 2024 water rates analysis report. And I would like to thank Mary Rallis, our water utility administrator. She's here tonight. She prepares this report. In this report, you will find, well, what's driving a water rate increase? Increasing, what's really driving it is three main things. CAP deliveries, our Central Arizona project, our portion of that water. Those deliveries are increasing 20% next year compared to this year, as well as our wheeling costs. We wheel, or we have a portion of our Central Arizona project water delivered to our service area through the City of Tucson's water system, and we pay them the cost associated with delivering that water to our service area. And works that we've been told that'll go up 5.5%. And then we're projecting our operations and maintenance costs to increase 3%. Additionally, in last fiscal year 22-23, we had a revenue shortfall of a little over $840,000, and that was mainly attributed to a wetter fall, winter, and spring. Additionally, we're cash funding our existing system improvements. Over the five-year projection period, we project we'll spend a little over $10 million. And this is every year, you know, we reinvest in our capital infrastructure, rehabilitating wells, reservoirs, booster stations, those kind of just maintenance costs that we need to keep our system healthy. So we spend typically just around $2 million a year maintaining our existing assets. We have a cash reserve requirement. The utility must maintain an operating cash reserve requirement of 20% of personnel, O&M, and debt. And cash reserves at the end of the fiscal year must exceed the cash reserve requirement. And the water rate report is now formally available to the public. One of the things I'm showing in this table here is in the water rate analysis report under Appendix A, there's quite a bit of detailed information showing the revenues and expenses for the water utility. I just am really showing the bottom line here. And what we're doing when we do our water rates analysis is we're really balancing the cash reserve required versus what we project our cash reserve will be at the end of the fiscal year. We need, you know, this number here to be larger than that number there. So we do, when we do our analysis, we project out a five-year period, and we just need to make sure that our cash reserve available, the bottom line highlighted in orange there, is greater than the cash reserve required. So we, you know, we work on our rates, and you know, we'll do even like a standard performa with no water rate increase. And right away we saw that the cash reserve that we projected we would have fell below our cash reserves that we required. And it's really because of, you know, we have these increasing costs up here and we had a revenue shortfall. So what does this look like, the proposed potable water rates and fees? We have two components of our water rate. We have a base rate, and that's just a cost that the customer pays every month, whether they use water or not. It's just a base rate. It's the cost of having access to the resource, as well as a commodity rate. Those are the two rates we have, and we also have what we call a groundwater preservation fee. I'm first going to discuss the base rate. 87% of our customers have a 5/8 inch meter, and they will see a $1.06 per month increase in that base rate. So here you can see, here's my meter sizes. It goes from 5/8 inch all the way to an 8 inch. And you can see the current rate versus the proposed and what that increase would be. Only residential customers have a 5/8 inch or 3/4 inch meter. Most of our residential customers have a 5/8 inch meter. If they have a really big home and they have a sprinkler system in their home, they may have a 3/4 inch meter. The 1 inch meters and larger are typically our commercial customers. So that makes up the base rate component. With respect to the commodity rate, that's based on how much water you consume. And we have a tiered system. Right here you can see we have four tiers. Tier one is, you know, 0 to 7,000 gallons. Tier two, you know, 7,000 to 16, so on and so forth. This is how what we call conservation pricing. Most of our customers are in a tier one, so they pay the lowest commodity rate. If you're in a tier one, you can see a 27 cent per 1,000 gallon increase. That's roughly a 10% increase. And one of the things we've been really working on is to incentivize customers staying in a tier one, which most of our customers are. We have that first tier being the lowest increase in the commodity rate. So you can see the tier two is increasing 25%, tier three, 35%, and tier four, 40%. I was just looking at some numbers this afternoon, and roughly 67% of our customers are in Tier 1, 27% in Tier 2, 5% in Tier 3, and 1% in Tier 4. Additionally, we're proposing a groundwater preservation fee increase of 10 cents per 1,000 gallons. This is the fee that's used to bring in others, or allowing us to utilize other sources of supply other than groundwater. It's restricted funding only for those projects that bring in other sources of supply other than groundwater. And this is for existing customers. So if we do some monthly water bill comparisons to other water service providers, when we do our water rates analysis, we don't really look at what other water service providers charge their customers per se. We base it on what our costs are to provide this service. But we do like to benchmark ourselves and make sure that you know we're being competitive and that we're providing the best value to our customers possible. So 87% of Oro Valley customers, they have a 5/8-inch meter, and they consume on average 7,000 gallons a month, and they're in Tier 1. Those customers utilizing 7,000 gallons a month with a 5/8-inch meter, they'll see an increase in their water portion of their bill of $3.65, or 7.9% increase. I know this council is very familiar with our water rate increases in the past. The water utility has been working really hard to keep the water rate increases below 5%, and we've been successful for the past 10 years in doing that, except for this year because of the revenue shortfall we had in fiscal year 22-23 and the really big jump in our water resource costs. We just couldn't keep it below 5% this year and meet our cash reserve requirements, so we're at 7.9%. So looking down here, a customer with a 5/8-inch meter using 7,000 gallons a month, they currently pay $45.99. What's proposed would be $49.64, or a 7.9% increase. If you would compare that to our neighboring water service providers, if you were in Metro Water Service Area, you'd be paying a little over $56 for the same service. Marana, a little over $55, and Tucson Water, a little over $55. So, you know, this is just confirmation to us that we're still providing a very good value to our customers. Additionally, what we show here, this would represent a Tier 2, Tier 3, and Tier 4 customer. And the reason you see 15,000 gallons, 25,000 gallons, and 40,000 gallons, customers that are in those tiers, that's typically what they consume on average. So, for example, here again, if you're in Tier 2, you're going to pay $96.44, or an increase of 14.5%. Here again, that percentage is bigger because that Tier 2 percent increase is not 10% as it is in Tier 1. It's a 25% increase. With that being said, you would expect to pay $96.44 if you had a 5/8-inch meter and you use 15,000 gallons a month. Comparing that to our other water service providers, you can see we're still less expensive than our neighboring water service providers. Additionally, and this is by design, because if you look at Tiers 3 and 4, you can see the percentages increase. And here, that's just that conservation pricing. The customers that we do have in Tiers, you know, 2, 3, and 4, we want to move them over here into Tier 1. Tier 1 is going to provide you just the lowest cost possible. And this has been very, very effective for us. We found one of the best ways to encourage conservation is through conservation pricing. So what does the schedule look like? On January 8th of this year, our Water Utility Commission made a recommendation on water rates. Tonight, I'm before this council to present the notice of intent to increase rates. Tomorrow, if council moves forward with the notice of intent, we will publish the hearing date on the town website. It meets the 60-day notice required by Arizona Revised Statute. Additionally, it will publish a notice of intent in the newspaper. That meets the 20-day notice required by Arizona Revised Statute. And then on June 5th, we're slated to hold a public hearing on the proposed water rate increase. And it's at that time that council would make a vote whether to approve or not approve the proposed water rate increase. If it is approved beginning July 6th of 2024, the new rates become effective. And that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Abraham. As Mr. Abraham said, this is to provide a notice of intent to increase water rates. There's not a public hearing tonight, and I do not have any blue cards for this item. Before we take questions, I'm going to make a motion. I move to approve resolution number R24-07, providing notice of intent to increase the potable water base rates, increase the potable water commodity rates, and increase potable groundwater preservation fee for the Oro Valley Water Utility.
Second that.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. We'll open it for discussion, questions. Councilmember Bowen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Abraham. Can you go back to the slide where we show the revenue short? Yes, the second bullet. Do we have any information to characterize the revenue shortfall in terms of meter sizes? Do we understand, you know, who bought less water in fiscal year 22-23 than, say, 21-22, or who bought less than we predicted they would?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's literally, just qualitatively speaking, a majority of our customers are residential customers. We don't have a lot of commercial customers. And aggregately, when you look at our residential and commercial side, the residential customer aggregately uses much, much more water than the commercial side. That's really a reflection of that wetter fall, winter, and spring in fiscal year 22-23, and residential customers utilizing less water.
And wetter than what, the year before? Wetter than average?
Yes.
So what do we mean?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, wetter than the year before. So what happens is we do our water rates analysis. We'll look at like the previous 3 years' consumption and look at an average, and we just project that number forward and say, okay, we think we're going to sell this much water. If we have, you know, a really wet winter, in which we had, we'll overproject our water sales. You know, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, over the past several years, I had been increasing the base rate to provide that revenue stability, you know, to rely less on the commodity rate. Because when you rely too heavily on the commodity rate, you can get these big swings in your revenue. But anyways, it's directly attributed mostly to the residential customer using less water because of a wetter year.
And then regarding the revenue shortfall, this is my personal recollection of the first time that we've announced this in a public meeting. What do you do? How do you respond to a revenue shortfall? What do you do operationally to make up for that?
So typically one of the things with a revenue shortfall, it can be a little tricky because typically the first half of the fiscal year, we sell more water than we do the second half of the fiscal year. And a lot of times we don't really realize we're going to have a revenue shortfall until sometimes, you know, December, January. So, you know, internally, I'll ask, you know, my senior management team, that's, you know, engineering, admin, water operations, hey, really look at your spending this year. And they're great. Now, there's not a lot we can do to change on the engineering and customer service side, because usually by that time, engineering's already entered into contracts and we're already performing the existing system improvements. But well, from the water operations side, they've been great about, you know, really not performing any spending that maybe isn't absolutely necessary. But by that time, we only have, you know, 5, at the most 6 months of the fiscal year left. So there's only so much we could bend that curve. But we do just try to really, really, really tighten our belts just so we can get that number as low as possible.
Did I understand you correctly? Our fiscal year is from July to June. So December is the middle of the fiscal year. So are you saying we're going to have a shortfall in December or January, right in the middle of the year?
It's about the middle of the year. We can start seeing a trend that, hey, we may have a shortfall this fiscal year. Because it isn't just all of a sudden in, You know, you wake up in May and you're like, oh my God, I'm $800,000 down. You know, you may see, and I'm just qualitatively speaking, you may see in December, hey, we're tracking maybe $200,000 lower, but you know, you don't know the extent of it. Like, for example, if we have an excessively wet winter and spring, it can really skew the revenues.
As liaison to the Water Utility Commission, I'm not seeing this. I'm not seeing this reported to us in December, January, February, and March. And this is the first time this has been reported. I went back to look at the previous years. This is the biggest revenue shortfall I think we've ever claimed. So I'm just trying to understand, you know, where it comes from.
So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, we provide quarterly financial reports to the Water Utility Commission. So those revenue shortfalls should be shown during those projection periods. I'd have to go back and look at my previous presentations to the Water Utility Commission. But like I said, if we do a second quarter presentation in December, we might not highlight that or identify that to the Water Utility Commission because we might not know the extent of the revenue shortfall. You know, come the third quarter, we might. And then, of course, the fourth quarter, the fiscal year is over. So we do provide quarterly updates to the Water Utility Commission.
Okay, thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon.
So, Mr. Abrams, you're basically saying this shortfall is due to weather variations and rainfall variations.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, that's correct.
So do you think perhaps in the future you can do a better job of predicting the weather or controlling the weather for us?
So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, for example, we've had some, and it's been great from a water resource perspective. It's saved, Lake Powell. Hey,
that was a rhetorical sarcastic question.
No, I can't, but looking forward.
I was just trying to convey the point to our residents that the water utility has to make an estimate of how much water will be used by our residents each year and base the rates and balances upon that. And when we have more rain than the last 3-year average, we sell less water, which is not surprising, collect less revenue, which is actually a very good thing for water conservation. So it's actually a positive in many cases when there's a shortfall due to the reduced sale of water. That means people don't have to pump groundwater as much. So,
and Mr. Grand Councilman Solomon, to that point, it's a fine line we walk because if the rate is too high, if I stand here and say, "Hey, we don't need a rate increase this year because we collected $800,000 more," then all of a sudden it's like, "Well, your rate was too high last year." So, we try and balance it, and this is one of the reasons why we have cash reserves. Thank you.
Other questions, Councilmember Nicholson.
Mr. Abrams, we do a base water rate, and you say we do that basically for budgeting, correct?
So we have a base rate and a commodity rate. What's important about having finding the balance between the base and the commodity rate is the base rate really gives you the opportunity to have revenue stability. For example, if we didn't have as healthy of a base rate that we have now, this number would be bigger.
Yeah, but and I know we can't predict the weather perfectly, but isn't there like another, because my issue is having the base rate so high. I know people that have, I don't know what it is, I think it's like $30, but base rates, let's say $30, and then the water they use is $40. So it's, kind of hard to get those people to conserve some of their water when their base rate's almost the same amount as their commodity rate. Whereas if we just had a commodity rate, maybe some of those people that, wash their cars and they leave the hose on, like I did when I was a kid, but now I'm an adult and I got my own kids, I don't do that, but isn't there a way that we could maybe try and do mainly commodity rates and then charge enough, and then some years we have more, and then if we have less another year, then we know that we have to increase commodity rates. And I know that we may have more rainfall the next year, but isn't there a way to kind of average it out so we can try and just charge commodity rates?
So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, so if you look, for a 5/8 inch meter, as I said, represents 87% of our customers. The potable base rate is going from 21.14 to 2220. I mean, it's going up 5%. I mean, how much lower does it, you know, you need that revenue somewhere. And this is one of the reasons, to your point, of encouraging conservation. And that's one of the reasons why we're really pulling tiers 2, 3, and 4 away from tier 1, because, you know, tier 2, you're at a 25% increase in your commodity rate. I guarantee you this will encourage people to be in tier 1. You know, if you look at the water portion of your bill, sorry, you know, just the water portion only of your bill, it's going to be, you know, for our average customer, you know, just under $50. So I think one thing is, like, when you look at your water bill and you see it's $120, you have to look at the water portion of it. It's less than half of the total bill. You know, we try to be sensitive to, you know, the folks that are struggling, because then we understand that if you have more revenue at the commodity rate, that customers that can then have more control over the cost of their water bill. But here again, I'm trying to protect and preserve the water utility's, you know, financial strength, and get away from surprises like this. So I feel like our base rate, the revenues we collect from our base rate and commodity rate are pretty well balanced. Gives a customer enough power to control the cost of their water bill, but while also providing us the revenue stability we need.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with changing at 10, 25, 35, 40%. I'm totally in agreement of that. If the more water you use or waste, that you pay a proportionally higher percentage for the water. But doing the base rate, our average is $49. And yeah, the base rate is only 22, but that's, what, 44% of the average homeowner is paying it towards the base rate, whereas, you know, we have a lot of people that are snowbirds. They don't even use the water during the summertime. And, yeah, I just think, like, you know, that's the average is $50 a month. The people that do try and conserve, maybe they're $40 or $35. It's not a whole lot of money, but at least it kind of benefits those people that are trying to do a really good job. And I do understand you want, you know, the base water rates help you have less surprises, but I would imagine that there's some type of way to average it out. But and I know you have to maintain the pipes for those people that are gone to Minnesota during the summertime, but yeah, okay. It's just a thought that I had, and I was just curious what your thoughts are on the base rates.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor?
I guess I have sort of a similar question. After attending the Water Smart Conference, I just felt like maybe, I feel like a lot of good work has gone into this, and I understand the shortfall because of the wet weather patterns that we had. But I just feel like we could do a little more in terms of financially encouraging conservation. And I don't necessarily mean that by, you know, jacking everyone's rates up way high, but in shifting some of that. Because, you know, if an average water user is like $49, you know, only $20 of that is based on their water, right? Because they've got, you know, $29 of it is their groundwater preservation fee and their base rate or something. So it's just the percentage of their use that's actually based on their water of their bill is kind of low. So if they, I kind of think of it as if they went out and invested, ripped up their plants that were more water sucking, put in native plants, all to cut their water, you know, a quarter or a third or something, they're saving like, what, $5 a month, $6 a month? Like, I just feel like maybe there should be more of a reward for conservation. But I do understand that there are capital costs and there's a balance there, but I don't know if we've kind of, because now our base rate is more than our commodity rate, I don't know if we've kind of passed that balance or not. But I think for this year, given what you've got and, you know, the financial analysis that you've done, I think that's good. It's just kind of food for thought moving forward, as if there's any other way to adjust the rates or even maybe to add a lower tier that has even lower water usage. With six people in my house, I wouldn't benefit from, you know, a further lower tier probably. But there are other people who are awesome at water conservation, and maybe you know, they could have an opportunity or something. So that's just kind of a thought, I guess, a food for thought. But you can answer if you have a response. Sorry,
Mr. Mayor,
a specific question.
Vice Mayor Barrett, one of the things we have looked at is we are updating our water rate model such that we can look at adding lower tiers, like a 0 to 3,000 gallon, like a tier zero. We are looking at things like that. Two things I'd like to point out. You know, this CAP, this was a surprise for all water service providers. Even though last year we were in a tier one, and because of we had such great winter hydrology in the upper basin states, Lake Mead came up, that we're now in a tier one. So usually when you go from a tier two to a tier one, our water resource costs would go down because CAP is selling more water to more customers. But what CAP told us was, it was all water service providers, is yes, we're going from a tier two to a tier one, but they're seeing increases in their O&M costs and power costs such that we're going to charge you a tier three rate. So, you know, this was a surprise to us, and it further aggravated us such that we're in this 7.9%. One thing I'd like to point out is when we did do our 5-year projection, if there is a silver lining here, all things being equal, you know, we are projecting that in future years, the rate increases will be less. We understand, you know, the water utility, the staff and your water utility commission, when we first did this water rate analysis, we were over 8%. And even though 8 happens to be my favorite number, not when it comes to water rate increases. And I said, we got to get this below 8% and keep the, and we worked our budget, we worked our expenditures, and we were able to accomplish that. I understand, you know, 7.9% it's a big increase, and we're sensitive to that. Another thing we're going to be doing is, you know, we have our smart metering system. We're collecting a lot of data. We're going to be messaging to our customers that, you know, 60%, on average, 60% of our customers' water use is exterior use. So that $50 water bill, like $25 to $30 of that isn't even being used for human consumption or washing. It's being used for irrigation. So we're trying to do our best to help our customers save money, and we're hopefully reflecting that in our tiers. But we understand it's a lot.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate the work that you've done to keep our water affordable for our residents, especially compared to neighboring jurisdictions. And I know that you take that really seriously and don't take rate increases lightly. So I'm not so much talking about the rate increases as I am just kind of that encouraging conservation. But maybe the biggest gains to be had are to get the people that are in tier three, tier four, to use more like the tier one rate. So, and maybe what we have is set up sufficiently for that. I was just kind of looking at, you know, the average consumer, what their bill might be. But maybe this approach will get our biggest gains of getting those tier three and four users, helping them to get down into tier one and two. So thank you. And I really appreciate the work that you've done for our citizens in trying to keep our water affordable, clean, healthy, and available, and secure. Thank you.
No. And thank you, Vice Mayor. Let me just say, this council has always been supportive of their water utility, and really looking out for what's in the community's best interest. And we have these conversations, council and staff, all the time. And we appreciate your confidence in us, and we'll do our best to keep rates as affordable as possible and keep your water utility financially sound.
One more quick thing. I'm not sure that a 0% rate increase in years 4 and 5 is realistic or not. So we'll see,
well,
right?
Yeah, you know, here again, those are the projections.
Okay.
But, you know, I'll tell you what, if we, one more point, do you remember during COVID, we had a proposed water rate increase, and because of this community's support of their water utility, we had the cash reserves that we said, you know what, we can skip a water rate increase this year. And we had a 0% increase in fiscal year 2021-22, I think it was, or 2021-22, So by keeping us healthy, if those kind of things come up, we can do that. And that's what we want, where we want to be. Thank you. Yeah.
Very good point, Mr. Ahern. And we appreciate your presentation this evening. There's a motion on the table to approve the notice of intent for these rate increases. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to item 2 of the regular agenda. Mr. Standish.
Discussion and possible action regarding the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve.
This item was requested by Councilmember Nicholson and Vice Mayor Barrett. Vice Mayor Barrett, you have the floor.
Thank you. Is it possible for me to get the slides up? Okay, perfect. All right, I'll just try and give a little bit of a brief background information as to how and why we're here tonight and bringing this tonight. So if we could go to the next slide. So that first was a picture of what the nature preserve looked like when it was a golf course and pond. And here's where we are today. And so, of course, the nature preserve is beloved to all of us, but the pond area in particular, as well as some other areas, could really use some assistance, in my view. Okay, if we could go to the next slide. Okay, so I just want to give a little bit of background information because it's been many years of various iterations of this project, and I've heard various confusing things from different people. So this is kind of a picture of what was proposed by Romspen, who was the owner of the golf course, and the Canadian owner. And you can see here that this whole section in the center holes all along Vistoso Highlands Drive, all the way through the whole driving range, and all the way through along to Pebble Creek Drive, was proposed for high-density residential and medium-high-density residential in that whole section. And then there were two areas here along Rancho Vistoso Boulevard and down south along, let's see, which one is that again? Vistoso Highlands, right? That's not Vistoso Highlands. What street is that called? Anyway, that are zoned for right across the street from Innovation Academy that were zoned for medium density residential or proposed. They weren't actually zoned. This was their proposal for what they wanted to build here for a rezoning. Can I have the next slide? Thanks. So this is just kind of several slides, and it's in the packets that go through a little bit of the information about what has happened, kind of to orient us. So 2018 in June was when Romspen turned the water off on the old Vistoso golf course. So that's 6 years ago this June. So our residents who live along this area have been, you know, dealing with this and working on it for 6 years. And I remember that because at the time I was going door to door knocking on all of your doors and having these discussions with you. And I know that others were as well. And so that's what kind of began the whole process. And you'll remember there were various iterations and ideas that followed. But so 6 years ago, the water was turned off. Next slide. So then in 2019, there was a lot of back and forth. Preserve Vistoso was formed, and there were lots of ideas going around as to what could be done. So, but nothing else. All right, so if we could go to 2020. So in 2020, the proposed development that I showed you in one of those earlier slides was really getting going about in March, so that's about 4 years ago. And Mike Ford with the Conservation Fund came out, and that was kind of the beginning of the council involvement there in 2020 in June. And Romspen rejected the fair market value offer that was made for the Vistoso Golf Course. So again, in November, the council got involved and tried to work with third parties to purchase the land zoned as open space golf. So next slide. Okay, thanks. So we can see that here there were various things going on in 2021. Finally, we kind of struck a deal in September. And what's amazing is there's that tight timeline from September to December. And that's the time that the citizens of Oro Valley raised $2 million, give or take, to assist the town of Oro Valley in purchasing this. And they did that in 2 months, 3 months. So I think that's an incredible feat. And I don't think that I know of, I don't think that's ever been done in the history of Oro Valley to help make that occur. So, and then in December, that settlement agreement was executed. Okay, next slide. So then in February, kind of the whole different agreement went down. The Conservation Fund purchased the 202 acres that were zoned open space golf for 1.6. Ross Rolney purchased the 6-acre clubhouse parcel for 1.7. The town of Oro Valley provided 885 to settle all disputes. So Romspen agreed at the price of $4.25 million to sell the Vistoso golf course property. And all of those settlement agreements at that time were posted on the town website and put out in a press release and made available to the public. And then here in May, the Conservation Fund went ahead. They were the property holder. They hadn't transferred it yet to the town of Oro Valley. And so they put in some additional funding to clean up the old Vistoso golf course, kind of get the native invasive species out, et cetera. Yes. And that additional funding was the residents' funding. So that was additional funding that the Conservation Fund had raised from the residents. So the residents paid for that through the Conservation Fund. So then in July, the town received the property and the Conservation Fund transferred it, and a conservation easement governing the use of the property, as well as a separate easement agreement with the developer Ross Rolney, was recorded with Pima County. Those easements didn't go before town council, but were signed by town representatives and were later made public. So then we, Site Southwest, the consultant for the master plan, came on board. Okay, next. And so quickly I want to point out here that May of 2022 is when the old Vistoso golf course is named Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. Was really the last time that the town council had any kind of vote on this property. So that was almost 2 years ago. Okay, next slide. So then there were various iterations of the master plan that went forward. There was different public input processes, meetings, Parks and Recreation Advisory Board. There were questions about whether the master plan was or wasn't consistent with the conservation easement. There were questions about what was and wasn't good, appropriate to do on the master plan. So then we get to the town council had a study session about a year ago on the Vistoso Trails master plan, which didn't come back for the town council for a vote. And we had the conservation easement transferred to Archaeology Southwest in September. So I guess technically that was also a council vote, because that was on our consent agenda, but it wasn't really an overall look. It was just transfer of the conservation easement. Okay, next slide. So that brings us to today, tonight, March 3, 6, 2024, and we've had a couple different surveys sent out. I understand there's still, you know, work and decisions to be done on the master plan. If you could go to the next slide. This slide is just to show the different motions and their dates that were made by town council, kind of putting them all in one location for everyone to see. Okay, next slide. Okay, so a couple different surveys have gone out, and they've come back with a general consensus around certain things for prioritization, including cart paths, the pond, and reseeding everything. Sometimes it was tricky because some of the surveys said T's and greens or not T's and greens, and those were two different items, or pond or water feature, et cetera. But overall, these are kind of the things that have come forward from that survey. Next slide. And so one of the surveys has this prioritization survey, kind of gives this budget. And this is the budget that was more or less put into the town's 10-year plan, capital improvement plan. So it's not a problem in the sense that, you know, that's what was the last thing agreed upon by council. But I think that if we only put this amount of funding towards this project, then this property will more or less always look the way it currently does, because this amount of funding is what's required just to keep the weeds at bay, to keep the native invasive species out, and the non-native invasive species out, and to maintain safety on the cart path, et cetera. So in my view, this amount of funding is not adequate to really make some progress on the plan. And so part of the reason for bringing it here why now? Why bring it forward? One, I feel that it's maybe languished long enough in terms of all of us trying to get the project moving forward. And two, and this is the most important, I think, is that, you know, this year's budget is being more or less made now. So I feel that rather than have a balanced budget that comes through to us that doesn't include funding for the preserve, and then we would have to add funding at that point, which would be more difficult, it would be better to upfront say we want to add funding to the preserve so that it can be just baked right into the budget and we can get a balanced budget brought to us that will have that funding already allocated. And then we can continue to have conversations about, you know, what is the exact plan for the pond area, what is the exact plan for the revegetation or the approval of the master plan, hopefully in this near future, but we'll have some funding set aside to be able to accomplish some of those things. So I think that's overall the goal of why we're here tonight and why now on March 6th.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I just need one moment here.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, I think Archaeology Southwest is on the line, so if it's possible that they could speak as part of my presentation, that would be great. Thank you. And they are the conservation easement holder.
I'm hearing that they're actually not on the Zoom call.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Councilmember Nicholson, was there anything you wanted to add before I open it to the for public blue cards?
Sure. I was going to try and make a motion and then talk real quick, or you want me to wait on that?
Let's wait. So I have a number of blue cards so I'd like to open it to public comment at this point. As you come forward, please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. And we'll begin with Cheryl Lamona. Sorry, Cheryl. You'd think after 6 years I could say your name correctly.
You had it right the first time. It's Lamona. Oh, good evening. Well, thanks for all that history, because I'd like to kind of go back even a little bit further than some of that. I am Cheryl Lamona, and I'm a Rancho Vistoso resident. I do not live on the golf course. I have to drive to get there when I would like to walk on the course, X course. Anyway, I'm going to go back to April 2020 when the general plan amendment was submitted for the Vistoso golf property. And of course, all the neighbors were opposed to that because it called for a senior care facility and residential subdivisions. And so they sought other options, and that's when TCF entered the picture. And then Romspan got into the negotiations with TCF. But I'm going to go back 1 month prior to that, which was when PROS Consulting started to do the Parks Master Plan. And they obtained a lot of input from the community through their various surveys. They even developed a website so that the residents could provide feedback on the parks and recreation needs. And they actually had 926 responses online from January 20 to May 20. But the town didn't own the golf course in 2020, so it couldn't be included in that master plan. Nevertheless, when the report finally came out, PROS reported that the residents consistently expressed their desire to preserve the defunct Rancho Vistoso golf course as an open space conservation area, and that was throughout all the community input opportunities. And indeed, the Parks Master Plan charts indicated that open space was ranked as high priority in all household types townwide, and preserving the golf course in Vistoso as open space received a high volume of comments.
So sometime after TCF acquired the property, of course, Southwest entered the picture to develop the Vistoso Trails Master Plan. And they did a lot of site visits, and they engaged with the community. And finally, in May of 23, they presented the master plan to you, council, but it wasn't approved. And it wasn't representative of the residents' desire to keep it simple, revegetate, and fix the pond. And it clearly shows that they were not familiar with the conservation easement, as the majority of the plans conflicted with it. It's a nature preserve. It's not a national park with park rangers offering nature walks and fireside programs. So here we are today. It's nearly 2 years since the property was transferred to the town, and we still have no plan. We've had a few, two more biased surveys that were conducted, and we found out in that the allotted funding in the budget will barely pay to kill the weeds. At this rate, those who made the significant donations so that TCF could acquire the property will never see it restored to its original desert beauty. So I'll close with a description from the parks page on the town website. The Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve presents the beauty of the Sonoran Desert teeming with wildlife. The existing 6.2 mile, 8 foot wide concrete path winds through the property, providing visitors with views of the Catalina and Tortolita Mountains, examples of varied desert vegetation, and the opportunity to view an abundance of wildlife. That's not accurate. It looks worse than the Alaskan tundra. So please consider making funding, providing funding to make this description on the website come to fruition. Thank you.
Joseph Afanidi. I apologize, Joseph. It looks like, pardon, Afanati.
Joseph Afanati. I am a Rancho Vistoso resident, Oro Valley resident, and mayor, vice mayor, councilman. I would like to thank the town and council for their part in recognizing the quality of life value of conserving these 200 plus acres for the citizens, visitors, and wildlife of Oro Valley. As we are considering this budget, budgeting required to maintain the land as permanent enhancement to the town as a native preserve. I am in support of substantial initial investment needed to bring the long neglected landscape back to what it should be. That will provide the foundation for the preserve to flourish as a safe, passive recreation area for people and an environment that the wildlife will choose to make their home for many years to come. I want to thank you for putting this on the agenda so we can be heard. Thank you.
Tom Breden.
Yeah, Tom Breden, Oro Valley resident, and Mr. Mayor and Council, appreciate you tabling this, and Vice Mayor having this as a topic, as well as Mr. Nicholson. Again, really want to thank everybody in the council for assisting on the original purchase of the old Vistoso golf course and making this Vistoso Trails really a reality. The funding, the master plan, you know, this has been going on for about 16 months now. We really need to step up, like Vice Mayor indicated, and get upfront funding greater than this 200K to get up front. You got to get this going. You can't wait 5-10 years down the road. So again, it should be a priority to make this a pristine looking area for all to enjoy. Again, need to increase the budget to make this happen. And the golf course, so I was out looking at, I'm out right on the driving range, right in the middle of the driving range, and it's not looking real pristine. So if we can get this budget addressed, increased, and make this happen for all, it'd be great. That's it. Thanks.
Marcia Sibin, or Marcia, my apologies again.
That's okay. Marcia Sibin, I am a resident of Oro Valley, and thank you to all of you for listening to us tonight. I'm especially grateful that Vice Mayor Barrett has encouraged us to some degree that there is some foresight that the budget is woefully inadequate to accomplish what's needed. I am a resident and someone who donated funds to purchase the property, and I feel like I have a vested interest in the outcome, as do everyone here. And I only want to say, I think there are other people who are going to say this more eloquently than I can, but I would like to say that I have an expectation that you will be mindful stewards of this precious resource, and that's what you're tasked with doing, is being the custodians and conservators. So please take our comments to heart and know that we're very passionate about this, and it's refreshing to see that someone else is as well. Thank you so much.
Bill O'Donnell. And in the queue is Tom Stegman.
Good evening, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, Council members. Thank you very much for this opportunity. First of all, I apologize for my appearance. I had an encounter with an overzealous dermatologist the other day, so it's getting better. I'm not going to continue to try to repeat what everyone else has said and what others will say, so I'm just going to relay a personal experience. We've bought our home in Siena neighborhood of Vistoso, 2011. Our back of our property abuts the nature preserve, what used to be the second tee box of the old golf course. So we went through the same angst that all of our neighbors did as we were concerned about what eventually would become of that property. We were thrilled to participate and contribute for the purchase, and we're even happier to see it end up in the hands of the town of Oro Valley. We love walking our dog on the golf course, the nature preserve. We love taking guests, our family, when they come to visit us, walking, pointing out the views, pointing out the petroglyphs that the Hohokam, long before the Hono Onum were here, have carved into the rocks there. We love it when our grandchildren get to see the animals that are flourishing back there. Not so much the javelinas, but for the most part, it's a good thing. However, of late, as we walk the preserve, as we go by the greens, as we go by the old tee boxes, as we walk past the fairways, and then we come to the empty and rather trashy-looking pond at Vistoso Drive, where I realize that what we've done is we have a preserve in name only. We have, Vice Mayor used the term, we have a defunct golf course that we've now allowed people access to walk on the paths. So I would greatly, I'm really heartened to hear your presentation, and thank you, Councilmember Nicholson, for your support and others who support this. We need a cash infusion to turn this truly into a nature preserve. Because if you just spend the amount of money that's been allotted so far to constantly put chemicals to try to kill the weeds, you're not helping the wildlife any. You're not helping the pets that are walking on that nature preserve. And as to what the town gets out of this preserve in the long term, at some point in time, beyond the Parks Department website, you'll sit down with marketing people, if it hasn't been done already, making a case for a brochure or a sales pitch why people should relocate to Oro Valley. This preserve could be a key point to point out. And you don't want those people coming and taking a look at whether they want to move here and realize what we're walking on is a defunct golf course that hasn't been developed. So thank you very much for your attention and your time, and I totally support increased funding to make the preserve a true nature support preserve. Thank you.
Tom Stegman, and in the queue is Matt Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, and Council members. Tom Stegman, I am an Oro Valley resident and have been for quite some time. We purchased our home next to one of the tees back in 2010 and planned our move here based on Oro Valley's amenities and the nature. And since we've been fighting or working hard on this, I appreciate all of the council support through the years. It's been quite a few years. And in getting this preserve established, now that it is established, we need to We need to protect it and do what's necessary. You've seen the priorities, revegetation, paths, the pond. Those things are very important, but they're not going to be taken care of with the amount of money that we're talking about here. And I think Vice Mayor pointed that out. I know that Josh has talked about that. So we need to pay attention to this. And you've all been so supportive and put so much work into this. It would just not do the town a favor to ignore what needs to be done. We need it done. I appreciate your help and your support on this. Thank you.
Matt Wood, and in the queue is Gerald Bren.
My name's Matt Wood, and I am an Oro Valley resident. Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, and members of Town Council, thank you for your service to our community. You guys do a great job. I served on the Parks and Rec Board for the past 4 years, and during that time, the Town Council stepped up and found a way to fund the project at Naranja Park by utilizing some of the half-cent sales tax proceeds to mostly build out Naranja. While the town was working on Naranja, the 202 acres of what is now Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve became available, and the Preserve Vistoso Group raised over $1.8 million, and many of those people are here tonight. And along with the town and a developer came up with enough money to send Romspin back to Canada. The town contracted with Sites Southwest to draw up a plan for the preserve, and although it has taken a lot longer than anticipated, the delay provided more time to solicit more input from the constituency, and we now have a better understanding of the wishes and concerns of our neighbors, and a good start for prioritizing the needs has been developed. The 23-24 capital budget for VTNP was $75,000 for ADA restrooms and another $255,000 for VTNP improvements. Nice sum of money, but not really enough, as we pointed out. We are hoping for more resources to be made available in the next budget cycle. The winding down of the capital requirements at Naranja should make funds available for VTNP. Naranja sat there for years before the town found the money to develop it, and it has been a huge success. And we hate to repeat that long period of time when it just sits there. We know the Parks and Rec are amenities and not a profit center. And parks and trails are at the heart of living in Oro Valley, and that the town's constituents are willing and able to invest in parks. And we'd like to think especially the only big park north of Tangerine. The proof of the townspeople's support of parks is right here in front of us. The Fantastic Four of Joe, Melanie, Josh, and Joyce were all up for re-election shortly after the Naranja Bonds vote, and they were all re-elected. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and we hope you'll keep this in mind when the capital budget is prepared for 24, 25, and beyond. Thank you.
Gerald Bren, and in the queue is Rosa Daly.
I'm Gerald Bren. My wife and I have been Oro Valley residents for the past 11 years. First of all, we want to thank the mayor and the town councilmen for all that they have done to make this nature preserve possible. It took a great effort on everyone's part. However, without significant funding in the coming year, recovery to natural desert vegetation would remain delayed. If the town would spend at least $2 million, it could go a long way toward getting the desert back and revegetated to a natural position. Without that spending, it's going to remain looking like an abandoned golf course for many years to come. The benefits of recovered natural vegetation are significant. Wildlife habitat is significantly improved over these barren golf course fairways. Natural water infiltration would be improved, and there'd be less soil erosion. Experts in desert revegetation indicate that deeply disturbed habitats, such as the Gulf Fairway, take as much as 76 years, give or take a few months, to recover to a natural condition. If we want to see an example of what can be done, you look at the road banks next to Tangerine. That project was done at about the same time the golf course was closed. Today, those road banks are recovered back to nearly normal desert conditions. They're beautiful, and there's a lot of growth on them, and they look good. We think that the golf course, the Zozo Trails area, could look the same within a few years if it received funding at this point in time. So remember that number, 76 years without help. But if the town would put up a couple $1 million up front, we could get this back to natural vegetation much more quickly. Thank you.
Rosa Daly, and in the queue is Phil Zielinski.
I'm Rosa Daly, and I'm an Oro Valley resident. I'm a Rancho Vistoso Oro Valley resident. I have a few helpers tonight, my husband and my lovely daughters and my neighbor, Tom. We have, where are you? This way. Thank you, Isabel. That's my daughter, Isabel, and that's my daughter, Madeline, and we have some photos. So you can hold up those photos to the town council, please. These are the beautiful pictures of the Kenyatta golf course that the town has made a significant investment in. And these are the pictures of the Vistoso golf course. The picture on the far left and this picture right and these picture right here are visible from La Kenyatta, the same road. You just keep on going north and you get this. Now you guys can turn around and show everybody the pictures. So the reason I did that is to give you an illustration of what an investment looks like. I mean, we don't obviously want a golf course back. Who knew? If I never see another golf course again, it'll be much too soon. But, you know, I'm here tonight to basically, you know me as a fierce advocate for this property. I have been since the day they turned the water off. But you'll have to excuse me if I cannot call it a nature preserve, because it's a dead golf course. And actually, my favorite phrase is zombie golf course, because there are things growing out there, but I'm not sure what they are. I want to be as respectful as possible, but I have to be honest. I am very disappointed about what has occurred since the town has accepted this gift, this property. You accepted the property with a rich cultural, historical value that was literally the product of this community's blood, sweat, and tears. And the first thing that happened is we were like on this consultant path that basically had a mind of its own. And, you know, it behaved a little bit like a runaway train and took us hostage. And now here we are 16 months later. The conservation easement has come into play and many things have been removed, but we still don't have a plan, and we have no idea when we're going to have a plan. And it's not rocket science. I mean, they had to remove things. So you click the mouse until the things are removed and you print and we're done, okay? And that's what we need to do, because we need to move this thing forward. I want to point out that I watched the October 4, 2023 council meeting, and at that time, it was discussed that the town had made it to that date a $23 million investment in golf. I think it was probably a little higher, but that's what a $23 million investment gets you, and this is what a $200,000 a year investment gets you. So I'm asking you tonight to please consider placing that million, 3 million, whatever, on the front end and help us get to a more picturesque environment. Thank you.
Phil Zielinski, and in the queue is Patricia Sturman.
Good evening, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, and this distinguished council. I'm a little nervous tonight because this is a subject near and dear to my heart. So I may have to read some of this to make sure I get it down right. What do all these parks and golf courses behind me to the south run by Oro Valley have in common? James D. Cree Park, Caneta de Oro Shared Use Path, Naranja Park, Riverfront Park, West Lambert Lane Park, three golf courses, Conquistador, Kenyatta, and Push Ridge, two tennis facilities. They are mostly active recreation and all are located south of Tangerine Road. Okay? And they also have a lot of water usage, especially the golf courses. We heard earlier tonight about water usage and how important it is, yet it was just voted for to continue with Push Ridge. Tens of millions of dollars recently spent on planned capital expenditures were not largely funded by the fees, if any, of these facilities. I realize they have some operating income, but doesn't cover the capital expenses. There are two areas under the control of the Oro Valley Parks and Recreation that are north of Tangerine Road, Honeybee Canyon and Vistocho Nature Preserve. Honeybee Canyon takes almost no maintenance, almost no water, and there's a drinking fountain. And that's what I think Vistoso Trails can become if we put the investment up front, because once you get it back to the natural state, it won't take any water. These are more passive recreation areas. They are for the animals, the Sonoran Desert plants, and low-impact hiking activity. Vistoso Trails needs to be restored to native plants. It needs capital input up front, not over 25 years. That type of investment is wasteful and not effective. Continued use of chemicals like glyphosate Roundup is troublesome. It is banned in Tucson and other major U.S. counties and cities, and it's banned in 20 countries. One-third the population of Oro Valley lives in Rancho Vistoso. We need our fair share. 17,000 of the 50,000 people live in Rancho Vistoso. We have funded all the other parks and golf courses in the 16 years that I've lived in Oro Valley. I funded those with my tax money, and so did other people in Rancho Vistoso. What have we gotten? Well, I'm sure we've gotten other services, but we haven't gotten in the parks and recreation. And that's what we're asking for, is for this nature preserve, a different kind of parks and recreation, to be funded. We've contributed over $1.8 million. It's time for us to get our fair share. It's a unique opportunity to leave a legacy for Oro Valley. It's important to many of us. 20, 30, and 50, and 100 years from now, people are going to remember Vistoso Trails as a natural area within an urban environment much more than golf courses and other facilities. Please help Vistoso Trails bloom and be a safe haven for wildlife. Thank you.
Patricia Sturman, and in the queue is Charles Restack.
Good morning, good afternoon, evening, whatever day it is. I'm glad to be back to talk to you again. My name is Patricia Sturman. My husband and I are residents of Oro Valley. During the last few years, I have been involved with Preserve Vistoso. And working with our dedicated board, we developed communications with our members and the public. We encouraged our members to support the town council and the town staff and the efforts to acquire the Vistoso Trails property. While our Preserve Vistoso members raised almost $2 million to help purchase the property, we could not have completed the acquisition without the support of all of you and this town staff. But now it is time to get on with it. It will be 2 years ago this summer that we celebrated the ribbon cutting. Mayor Winfield's comments at the event were wonderful and heartfelt. We looked at the future of the property with great enthusiasm and hope. We went to our meetings with consultants to voice our opinions. We said that one of our priorities was to make a decision on what to do with out before the pond, not to just let it sit there on Vistoso Highlands, a major thoroughfare. We also need plans for native seeding and revegetation of the former fairways, greens, and bunkers. We need the former cart paths repaired and maintained. We hope to work with Archaeology Southwest to the holder of the conservation easement to protect the property and honor the Native Americans who lived in the area in Sleeping Snake Village. Sleeping snakes are better than live ones. The property has great trails and mountain views, but it is still an old, old golf course. It's neglected. We need the council to invest in Vistoso Trails. Help us develop a world-class nature preserve that everyone will be proud that it is part of the town of Oral Valley. Thank you very much.
Charles Restack, and then Terry Hart is in the queue.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, hi, and Council, thank you for holding this meeting. I am a volunteer to the town of Oral Valley. I am your Environmental Planning Advisory Council representative to the Pima Association of Governments, a professional environmental scientist. I'm also a certified Arizona high school teacher, grades 6 through 12 in science. And Mayor, I'm a former Cub Master from Cub Scouts. If you dial it back, I know your history a little bit with Cub Scouts. This is not an abandoned golf course. This is a laboratory. This is an opportunity for education that is just absolutely huge. And it, you know, Rome was not built in a day is certainly the case with a project of this scale. Right now, I'm going through certification to be a pollinator steward, and I'm getting training. I'll be certified in rehabilitation of properties for pollinator plantings. One of the things in the plan that we had from the consultants was a pollinator garden. It was a little thing. This whole development should be a pollinator garden. I mean, the whole thing can be planted with native plants that will attract monarch butterflies to hummingbird moths, you know, all the things that we really want to see. And I'm willing to offer myself as a leader in this effort. And, Mayor, when I was accepted this pin, by the way, thanks, I love this pin. When I accepted this pin, I met some of the kids at the dinner, at the annual dinner that we had, and they're with the Youth Advisory Committee. So I started talking with them. You know, I said, I'm an environmental instructor. I teach at University of Arizona. I come out of University of Illinois. Hi there. We haven't met yet. That's Ross. And they were just really pumped. So, you know, people are looking for cash. Let's get some volunteer effort in here. Let's get some of the community. There are grants that can be applied for with the 501c3 like this. There's carbon greenhouse gas mitigation grants. There's, you know, with the pond. I know that prior they were talking in terms of possibly a wetland, and people didn't want to do something like the Sweetwater wetland and have mosquitoes and things. These have to be investigated, and you have people like me and Liz and Peter would be involved in, you know, helping guide this from a technical standpoint. But there's money out there. There's money out there that can be applied for, and so, Mayor, I volunteer if, you know, you would be interested. That's all I have to say, and right. You can, you know, let me know later or send me an email, but... Sure. I'll give this to Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Stack. And my apologies. It's just how the name was written on here.
No, but no, I put now, the middle
initial. Now that you're up here, I know who you are. Yeah. Terry Hart, and in the queue is Mark Enzer.
Terry Hart, Oral Valley resident. Good evening, Mayor, Vice Mayor, Town Council, and thank you all for your service. And thank you for Member Barrett and Nicholson for including this on the agenda this evening. Establishing the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve has been a massive victory for all, and that includes the wildlife. There are countless other municipalities across the country and here in Arizona that, similar to Oral Valley, have phenomenal parks, golf courses, aquatic center, community center. But how many of those municipalities can also claim they own a nature preserve as part of their recreational portfolio, let alone one protected with a conservation easement? We spend millions and millions and more millions each year maintaining and improving all our facilities here in Oral Valley. All good. Our nature preserve, not so much. And now, closing in on 2 years of town ownership, we don't have a master plan. In general, as several others have already mentioned, the former golf course looks like an abandoned golf course. And the pond area is an eyesore. It's an embarrassment, not representative of Oro Valley. Consequently, significant funding is needed. And none of us, I don't think, want to be dead when those improvements begin and are completed. Maintaining a desert long-term is relatively inexpensive. But transforming or revegetating 65 to 70 acres of a golf course, and that includes approximately the tees, sand traps, greens, back to Sonoran Desert, along with refurbishing the pond, is going to take a lot of resources. We all know that. That's going to take money. But that's still only going to be a fraction of the money we spend annually and collectively on all our other recreational facilities. So this evening, I'm advocating for and encouraging Town Council to move forward with significant funding for revegetating the nature preserve and refurbishing the pond area. I think we can all agree, and I think we all realize the value that the nature preserve brings to the town of Oro Valley. And with the appropriate funding, it'll be like we have our own desert museum. How cool would that be? We should look at these improvements to the nature preserve as an investment in Oro Valley's future. Let's make it a reality. Thank you.
Mark Enser, and in the queue is Joe Bell.
Hi, I'm Mark Enser. I am a resident of Oro Valley. I actually live on hole 10 of the dead golf course. So first and foremost, I want to thank the town council for being instrumental in orchestrating the purchase of this. Without you, we would have never been able to accomplish this. So it's truly amazing that we were able to do this. I actually walk the cart path every single morning. I do about 3 miles every day. That's my exercise. And I thoroughly enjoy this fantastic amenity that the town has been able to bring to us. We almost lost it all and had houses butting up right against our fence lines. And because of your efforts, we don't. So I sincerely appreciate it. The people in Oro Valley and Rancho Vistoso specific, we fought like heck to make it happen, and so did the council. It was really amazing to see the local government in lockstep with the community. And that being said, I have a new dream, one in which there is a filled pond on that property, one in which where I'm taking my kids there and we're fishing it, one in which we're riding our bikes to it and having a picnic next to the water and watching the ducks. But currently, it's looking more like a Freddy Krueger nightmare. And $200,000 a year is never going to get Freddy out of my life. I want to point out that there is no such public water feature in Oro Valley, nor is there even one north of River Road, period. The nearest one is Silver Bell Lake. That's about a 30-minute drive or so. We have a real chance at making a huge amenity and making something beautiful right here. The great news is that the property is already owned. The hole is already dug. The town water utility gets 50% of its water from the wells on and near the property. So there's water there too. Let's restore this to its beauty and give Oro Valley families something from our dreams. The town is nearing completion of the fantastic Naranja Park, and this should be the next amenity that they tackle. We need real funding to accomplish this, so let's turn our words into action and let's build the next great amenity. Thank you very much.
Joe Bell, in the queue, and I apologize, I can only see the last name, B-A-I-E-R.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Town Council members. First of all, I would like to echo our appreciation. My wife, Beth, and I are Oro Valley residents. We live right near the preserve. And especially applaud Vice Mayor and Council Member Nicholson. Thank you for bringing this to the forefront. So as we talked about a little less than 2 years ago, we had the ribbon cutting ceremony and many of you were there. And that was a great celebration. It was celebrating something unique that Oro Valley had. And one thing most people haven't addressed so far is that pickleball's great, tennis is great, golf is great, but this preserve is inclusive. Everybody can use this preserve. And that's what makes it so important. That's what makes it a diamond in the rough, if you will. Sorry about the golf pun there, but it's true. It's a diamond in the rough, but it's rough right now. And I implore you, without covering too much ground that everybody else ahead of me has already covered. But I implore you to visit it now and take a walk on the broken and the cracked paths. It's a significant safety hazard. So as we talked about before, $200,000, that's not even going to fix the cart paths, I don't think. I'm not a builder or developer or anything like that, but there's some immediate safety attention that needs to be accomplished. And then long range, to achieve the potential for this town to have such a great jewel out in the desert, such an inclusive activity, recreation park, is critical. It's a wonderful asset, but please, please commit the resources necessary to take it from its current state and to move it forward to the vision we all had a couple years ago when we turned it into a preserve. So again, thank you for all of your collective efforts in achieving the preserve, and I implore you to continue to move the ball forward and make it the wonderful jewel that it can be. Thank you very much.
Mr. Baer, and then in the queue is Richard Beam.
Thank you. Bruce Baer, resident of Oro Valley. I live on the east side of Tisali Way. Our property backs up to the former driving range at the former Estoso Golf Club. Thank you for, as town council members, for agreeing to assist in the purchase of the old Vistoso golf course and making the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve a conservation easement as a reality for us. The $885,000 contribution that Oro Valley made to purchase the Trails Nature Preserve is about half of the $1.8 million spent by residents to purchase the former Vistoso Golf Club property. Most of the residents who contributed live in Rancho Vistoso, adjacent or near the old golf course. Other than a developer having to contribute land or money as part of their residential development, it's rare that neighboring residents help buy a significant parcel of land for a town park. As a real estate appraiser, I've appraised numerous properties for the purposes of conservation easements. Conservation easements run with the land in perpetuity. Those easements are very restrictive and limit what can be done to the land in perpetuity. I was very disappointed over the last few years when the Vistoso Trails Nature Master Plan process did not pay attention to the conservation easement restrictions. That was one of the things that drew out, I believe, the process. Not in retrospect, but that was a big slap in the face of the residents most affected by the master plan process by ignoring what was really in the conservation easement. So hence, we're speaking tonight, and we're appreciative of you having this on the agenda tonight. The properties, as people have already described, is in very bad condition needs immediate capital improvement. So I very much support increased funding on the front end to positively impact the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. You know, Rancho Vistoso represents about a third of the Oro Valley resident, the population, and yet very little money is spent north of Tangerine Road, especially on parks and recs amenities. The town has spent more than $23 million on golf in the past 9 years, averages more than $2.5 million per year since 2015. What does the town get out of the other parks, including the nature preserve? There's all kinds of amenities, and a number of people have already expressed that tonight in terms of being able to use the paths, et cetera. So one other thing quickly is the glyphosate that is being sprayed on the nature preserve. It's really bad, not only bad for the animals, it's bad if you, I've read studies in the past that have gone into people being very much affected medically, negatively by that. So those of us living near and around that are negatively affected. Thank you very much.
Richard Beam, and Mr. Beam is our final speaker.
Richard Beam, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. Good evening, Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council members. Saving the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve started out so promising. The town's $885,000 funding, combined with residents' $2 million contribution, created the council-approved conservation easement. Yet to many residents, it looks and feels like the town has abandoned the nature preserve. The master plan needs to be funded and finished according to the conservation easement agreement, which provides strict guidelines for maintenance and improvement. The necessary initial improvements and ongoing maintenance costs are small compared to what the town has spent on parks and recreation, especially south of Tangerine Boulevard. This is especially true of golf course expenditures. For example, $8 million for golf course irrigation upgrades, $1.7 million for new elevator and entryway at Country Club Building, $550,000 for cart path improvements, and a whopping $25 million bond for tennis and pickleball courts and such at Naranja Park. Yet the town council has begrudged us the nature trails one-time budget for remedial work on the land after many years of neglect now. The ongoing maintenance costs are a small fraction of what golf course maintenance continues to cost taxpayers. Many golfers pay as little as $10 a month to have a taxpayer-supported country club lifestyle. I don't begrudge this to those who live there, including Councilman Mo Green. But we are tired of looking at the eyesore of a pond in our neighborhood. This is disproportionate funding, clearly. Public documents show that residents living north of Tangerine are not given geographical equity for their tax dollars spent on parks and recreation. Improving the conservation easement would be a welcome step to improve this inequity. I suggest an upfront investment should include filling and maintaining the pond. I'm sure the migrating birds will come back and they would enjoy having water in the pond again, and we'd like to see them. Improving the cart path, no expansion of it required. Wildlife drinkers, a couple of those to help out our friends, our four-legged friends there. Couple of bathrooms upgraded and selective reseeding. So I would say folks in our neighborhood feel like we've been punished by the council for what has occurred to date. Let's work together in a meaningful way to make our unique nature corridor an area of pride for all of Oro Valley. Finally, I ask those of you who are up for re-election this year to pledge tonight, here and now, to support funding and commitment to improve the Vistoso Nature Trails Preserve. Thank you.
Okay. As I mentioned, Mr. Beam is our last blue card this evening speaker. Councilmember Nicholson, you have the floor.
Mayor, Councilmember, sorry to interrupt. I'm hearing that our guest speaker is available now.
Vice Mayor Barrett, Councilmember Nicholson, if you wish to have him answer any questions or in any way add to your presentation, now you could do so.
Okay, if it's all right, I'm interested in hearing what he has to say since he's the conservation easement holder as part of our presentation.
Well, thank you very much. This is John Welch. I don't know if I'm fully recognized here or if you can hear me, and I apologize for the technical difficulty.
We can hear you, Mr. Welch.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Mayor Winfield, and greetings to all council members and to everybody else in the audience. I got to tell you how impressed I am with the presentations this night, tonight, and the show of enthusiasm for the preserve. You know, I am the landscape and site preservation program director for Archaeology Southwest. And Archaeology Southwest, as you've heard, is, you know, your partner in the protection and preservation of the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve into perpetuity. And, you know, it's just an exciting time, I think, for the city, for the preserve itself, and certainly for Archaeology Southwest. This is our first closely connected community preserve. We mostly have worked with more remote properties and preserves in the past. I wanted to say also that it's an exciting time for the field overall of ecological restoration, and especially appreciate the comments from many of those who have spoken tonight about the amazing opportunities that exist to employ plant-based, non-toxic, non-lethal means for, you know, controlling invasive species and controlling erosion. I think that forefront is very much worthy of pursuit, and certainly agree that on 2 points, that the master plan is an important document and should be finalized, perhaps with modifications along some of these lines, because that is the surest way to really get to the level of partnership and investment to sustain the preserve, you know, in the long run, to attract additional external sources of investment. The master plan is essential. And at the same time, I don't see anything to prevent nearer term investment in taking care of some of the outstanding issues there and of getting a head start on it. I think a stepped up level of interventions on the stewardship of the preserve is well considered. I'm certainly available to answer any questions as they come up, but just wanted to let you all know how pleased we are to be working with you and to be a consistent and constructive presence in the future of the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve and the town of Oro Valley. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Welch. Councilmember Nicholson, you have the floor.
Hi, everyone. First of all, I want to remind everyone what we're here doing tonight. We are here looking for money to be spent on the preserve. We're not here complaining about the height of a nursing home. We're not here complaining about we don't want homes in our yard, we want homes in our neighbor's yard. So what we really have to do, I just want to say thanks to Joe, especially Mayor Winfield. He really spearheaded this to make it a preserve, work with Melanie, Rosa Daly, the preserve board, past and future members, and the community out here. You guys and staff, you guys all worked together to get us to this point today. So I already see that as a win. I feel like we drove 99 yards down the field, and I don't want to kick a field goal. I want to score a touchdown. So that's what I'm trying to do tonight. You know, we got to this level about 2 years ago, and, you know, we're going through another budget session this year, and I just knew it was time that we had to do something now or weren't going to see anything for a whole nother year, and I just want to see some progress for the people that put so much money into this. We have budgeted $200,000 for the next 25 years. I'm 40 years old. I'll be 65, and Terry will tell you, once you're 65, your 65th birthday today, you're going to be 90 years old by the time we're actually going to be putting in some capital improvements. So, you know, staff said that we need $6 to $10 million of work. I'm not requesting something like that. You know, I think we have to do a measured amount, though, and I do think, you know, it'd be nice for us to do something now for the people that you guys invested nearly $2 million in the community. That's unprecedented. I don't know if staff knows any other time where the community came together and put $2 million into it. I know one person mentioned, you know, we spend $10 a month for a couple of us up here, $10 a month to keep the golf course, and you guys saw the pictures of what the golf course cost me for $10 a month versus I know some of you guys put $100,000 into this community. The other thing is, too, I know that it does cost money. The golf course was losing $2.5 million a year. We fixed that. Police pension, we're going to save $31 million over 16 years. That's $2 million a year. We have, you know, our general fund, We're exceeding our general fund by $5.2 million. Our projected budget this year is 5.3, but our estimated use is 3.4, so that's about $2 million. And our community center fund is $1 million. I don't think we have to necessarily need that. We also have the apartment complexes going in, the Rolney property. We're going to have money coming from that. But I saw that our residents, you know, we put in a $2 million. So I'd like to make a motion, and this is for Standish as well. I move that we allocate $2 million in the fiscal year 2024-2025 budget for the revegetation of the Visoso Nature Trails Preserve grounds and beautification of the pond area. In addition, we should pursue grant funding to supplement this allocation.
Second.
Thanks, seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. Open it for discussion. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, council members. First off, I wanted to say I really appreciate the effort that the Vice Mayor made tonight to put together this timeline. Even as someone who participated in these events over the last 3 years, I learned a lot from going over that timeline. And I think it's time to stop thanking the residents for a great thing that you did. You made an investment of your time and your will and your energy, and it's really time for us to act. I don't think that the motion goes far enough. If there's going to be support for it, I think we should do it for at least 3 years. And there's something that always comes up in this town, and it's money. Almost every problem that we have is, do we have enough money for it? And if we do this, what other priority doesn't get taken care of? And I think you guys would be unpleasantly shocked at how naive our council is about our finances. Rather than look at finances more frequently as we come into a time in our town when there's so many infrastructure and capital projects to be looked at, we're actually looking at them less. We used to look at our finances on a monthly basis. Now we do it quarterly. And I can't look at you guys with a straight face and tell you no, unless I can tell you what we're spending the money on that we can't give to you, and it's more important, and that you might agree with me. So I hope that we'll see this as an opportunity, not just to move forward on this issue, but to mature our council's understanding of our finances. There are no miracle sources of revenue that are going to come into a town like ours. We're 15 miles from the 10 going west, 15 miles going south. We need to financially garden. That's a term that I heard from one of the town manager candidates. I think is exactly right. When you garden, you're acknowledging you don't have resources. Rather, you have energy and expertise to apply to a problem, and you want a high yield from your efforts. So I will support the motion, and I'm super grateful for the money that you put in. It's time for your investment's done. It's time for the town to start investing, and I hope we can do even more than this motion proposes tonight. Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also want to commend the community for all of their efforts and their persistence. I do have one question, and that is, I really want to get an understanding, because looking at the dollar amount that Councilmember Nicholson is proposing, I want to make sure that what we intended to be in terms of, is it, what did you say, reseeding and the?
It was a revegetation of the Visoso Nature Trails Preserve grounds and beautification of the pond area.
Okay, thank you. Because it's my understanding, and the reason why I ask is because it's my understanding that when you get something like a golf course put in, sometimes there can be irreparable damage done. So I really want to understand that $2 million is going to get the expected results. Because I'm not sure that it will without some other rehabilitation of the areas that we're talking about. So I want to get an understanding. So do we have anybody? How about John Welsh. Do you have any knowledge of that, general knowledge of just the severity of the damage that can be done by a previous golf course? Okay. Thank you, Chris.
I don't have all the updated information and numbers. That was something that I believe our consultant is planning to present at the next council meeting. But in terms of overall numbers, it is quite significant. I know it was referenced $6 to $10 million in total. If you're looking at pond beautification, I believe there are several variations of what that could be and associated costs, including the revegetation. You have almost, I think, 90 acres, and so $2 million would not cover all of that. And so we could have the conversations with town council maybe on what might be some priorities or some further direction on what council would like to see in regards to those for the motion.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Because, again, $2 million, and I'm not opposed to it. I do support it, but I certainly want us to know exactly what can we rehab that property to be appropriately. You know, it might need some more work and more dollars for it to be the reserve that we're saying it needs to be. Even if we don't do any, don't do the pond, anything, just reseeding and just revegetating. I mean, is that realistic for what we're dealing with right now? And that's my concern.
Councilmember Green and then Vice Mayor Barrett.
I agree with Joyce. I think that we need to put some money up. I think we need to get started on this. It's taken far too long. I would tell Mr. Bean that I don't live on a golf course, but I certainly support this and have from my very first walk around with the Sturmans. So if it's $2 million, maybe it's more. Personally, I kind of would like to see the pond restored, but I know that's going to be very expensive. But anyway, I think a water feature of some type would be a nice thing to have for sure.
Vice Mayor and then Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on the $2 million number. I don't think we're suggesting that $2 million is something that will get the entire thing completely finished or that that's the end of the plan. We're hopeful that maybe $2 million is something that we feel that the town could do in this next year that would be enough of an investment to really get the ball rolling and to give us the opportunity to seek out grant funding. A lot of times with grants and things, they want to see that you've got a plan, that you've got money that you're putting into it, that you're investing in it. The initial, I know estimates have changed and will continue to change and will probably keep changing until we get final bids, is my experience. But the initial funding from the master plan that was suggested had the lowest level pond at about, about $1.5 million and revegetation also at about $1.5 million. So at that, it was kind of saying $3 million. So if we put in two, if we were successful to secure a grant for one, then we'd be at three, and that was kind of close to our initial estimates. And I'm not saying necessarily what the exact plan would be for the pond or for the revegetation. I think we need to have that refined. But I feel like in order for us to be able to even move forward with any of those plans, we have to have funding. So if we just have funding for, a couple hundred thousand a year, we're not really going to be able to move forward. And so we don't want a super expensive plan that's expensive because it's lots of paving and lots of additional trails and lots of, additional things that aren't consistent with the conservation easement. But we do need to give an investment, in my view, to move forward. I have heard some council members say they'd like to go further, and I'd certainly be open to hearing those proposals.
Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you. First off, I am frankly amazed and have to just congratulate the Preserve Estosho and the efforts. I worked with Mike at the very beginning, and I was highly doubtful, like probably most people, that you could successfully raise anywhere close to the money that was going to be required. And anybody that's been involved in any kind of fundraising for any type of, you know, any type of charitable organization or cause will probably agree with that. If someone said, gee, we want to raise $2 million for this, they, you know, and we want to do it now, what is told you is impossible. But you managed to come through. And, you know, that still wasn't enough for what they wanted. But fortunately, you know, we managed to get the whole package deal together with the sale of the zoned apartment property and then with the town coming in. So that's the first comment. The other comments is, yes, it's been neglected. There's no doubt about it. Part of the difficulties you have to remember, normally when we do budgeting, it's town-wide for all the needs that we have. Most of you probably don't realize that over the last several weeks, councils received hundreds of emails from people who are insisting we build the additional two fields at Naranja, in addition to the ones we are. So we have hundreds of people telling us to go out and spend millions and millions of dollars on two more fields because, dang it, that's the number one priority and we better do it. So that's a difficulty with the budgeting. Our sales tax revenue has actually decreased in a period of inflation. So that doesn't bode well for the town's finances. We know we're going to have increases in the police budget because of inflation and competition for all municipalities across the country to try to hire a finite number of police officers that are out there. Now, that doesn't mean that we should be spending on this. I just want to give you a little dose of reality. $2 million will not come anywhere close to make this a lush, revegetated desert. Okay? Most you're going to probably see is hydroseeding. What is hydroseeding? That's when they spread, quote, wildflowers or natural seeds, which most people in their backyard spray as weeds, over the vacant land, and you hope that it takes. Revegetation of trying to make this a lush, natural desert, of going in there by hand and planting all variety of natural species and cactus and what have you, is extremely expensive. As was mentioned, particularly with a golf course, because of the grass that's there, the insecticides that were there, we were looking at around $10 million to convert that from an abandoned golf course to lush original desert. Unfortunately, you guys are right. It's an abandoned golf course. It wasn't a nature preserve when we bought it. And we have to look at what we can realistically get that property to and what the cost is and what the time frame is. And I do remember when this was first happening, a lot of the comments from a lot of the people involved in this was, we don't have to do this all at once. Remember, this can be spread out over years. And that's correct. And, of course, any type of re-landscaping or vegetation we do, hopefully, obviously, and you know things can grow pretty rapidly here. So, you know, I'm more in favor of saying, okay, let's do an initial $2 million investment. We got to clean the place up. We got to make sure all the safety issues are taken care of. And by gosh, we need to determine when we say revegetate, what do we mean? Are we going to work on the tee boxes? Are we going to work on the driving range? Are we going to work on areas concentrated around the current trails? What are we going to do? And we don't even have that yet. And that's a concern. I agree with you folks. It's been 2+ years and we don't even have a plan. So along with this money, we definitely have to get a plan to say, what are we going to spend the $2 million on? Just saying revegetate, well, that doesn't give staff direction on revegetate what, where, how, and with what. But it is a start. But I think we have to really focus on our next few weeks before the, well, months before the budget is finalizes, what are we going to spend this money on? And you folks need to be a major input into that, because you're right there. You walk through it every day. You see it every day. And you have a better feel for that location area than any of us do. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Councilmember Green.
I just would echo that as well. But I think the idea of this money is to kickstart it, get it going, and then we can prioritize. Maybe the carts are the first things to be done, the cart paths, rather. But anyway, we need significant input from the folks in this room as to what are the key issues we need to put this first seed money for. And then as we go out and get the grants and begin to build this out, it's going to turn into something that we'll really be proud of. So I agree both with Steve and with Joyce.
Thank you. Councilmember Nicholson.
Yeah, I would say part of the reason for the $2 million, $2 million is basically what our citizens put in. So I feel like that was kind of a minimum. Yeah. I thought that that would be easy for the council to kind of agree for $2 million. But there's also the grant. So there's two major grants. There's a trails grant, which basically we can apply for right now. And then there's a different grant, but it's kind of tied into Naranja Park. So we have to finish Naranja Park, but it's a one-for-one grant. So if we have $2 million in, they can do another $2 million. Buckeye just got the same grant recently for $3 million. So by talking to the Welch, it seems like it's not a given. Nothing's never – a grant is never a given, but it's pretty – it's most likely going to happen, I would say, or something like that. And so if you put that $2 million plus the other $2 million and then maybe we get $1 million for the trails, I mean, you're talking like $5 million. So this isn't like, oh, we only have $2 million. Yeah, it's $2 million, but it gets the ball rolling. The biggest thing is like, I want to do it now so that staff has something to put in the budget for this year. Stuff always happens, and you know, it doesn't get put in the budget. And every single year we do have, you know, reasons to we do have a limited amount of money, right? So we do have to decide where money needs to be. It's just I feel that you guys put this money in here, and it's something that has never happened before. I've never seen $2 million put in. And I can't think of the last time we put anything north of Tangerine for people in Rancho Vistoso, except for the roundabout, which, you know, some people really like and some people really don't like. But it, and that's part of the reason. So, I mean, that's why we did $2 million. I think it will take more than $2 million, but it at least gets us, you know, a step in the right direction. If we were to do that tonight, staff can start planning. And, yeah, we're going to have more input from us. This is just to make sure that there's money attached to the budget this year right now, and then hopefully we get some grant money and then we get more input from you guys. And you know, I mean, also too, as far as input, like I know we did the surveys and stuff like that, like I would not be against having some type of advisory board of, you know, go reaching out to Mike Ford, like, you know, get everyone that wants to say yes and then pick the top five donors of the yes pile, and like they should have a right to say, like, if you donate $100,000, you should have a little bit more right than the person who donated $50 or $100 or something like that. So, and yeah, really just talk to the citizen. Like, I mean, I went out this week. I met Terry, a few other people over the board, just talking to you guys and trying to listen. I'm not up here trying to spout what I want. I don't live there. Me and Mo live down on, Mo doesn't live on the golf course, by the way. I know someone said he lives on the golf course, but he wanted me to mention that. So I actually do live on the golf course. We're only spending $10 a month, but you guys put a lot more money in this, and I think you guys should have the say of what we're putting in there. And I didn't put this on here because I thought that's what I want to do. It's listen to you, what you guys want. And yeah, I met with you guys this weekend to find out. I mean, not all of you, but, you know, definitely some of you, people that wanted to talk to me. But, yeah, I mean, I would like to see something done tonight. And if council thinks that that's not enough money, that we need to put more money in, trust me, I'm open to that. But I just thought $2 million was reasonable enough. And whatever you guys decide, I'm open to what you guys think.
Let's start at $2 million. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Well done. Thank you. We're gonna take a 10-minute break. We're going to reconvene the regular session. Any future agenda items? Hearing none, I move to adjourn the regular session.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 4-0. I'm going to open the study session, or call the study session to order. Mr. Standish will read the item one of the study session.
Presentation and discussion regarding a potential zoning code amendment regarding vehicle storage facilities.
Planner Ms. Chavez will present this item. Welcome.
Thank you so much for your time this evening. So my name is Alex Chavez. I'm a planner with the town and taking lead on this proposed code amendment regarding vehicle storage facilities. I won't wax on too much about this and keep it exciting as I can. This evening, this item is for presentation and discussion only. No action is taken tonight. There we go. So this code amendment was initiated by town council during their July 2023 meeting, which stems from an applicant's request to develop a vehicle storage facility as a standalone use. The ask was to evaluate vehicle storage facilities as a conditional use, which allows for case-by-case review rather than a permitted use, which is currently allowed. Staff is here to seek feedback from the council on tonight's potential code amendment items that we have listed on the screen prior to drafting code language, and I'll expand on these during the brief presentation that I have. Just really quickly, on this screen, we have some key definitions from the zoning code that are key for this amendment here. First, the vehicle storage facilities is defined as the primary use is the storage of vehicles. And then second, vehicles is defined as a device that transports that's transported or people, property, drawn. So that's more than just cars and trucks. That's going to be your boats, utilities, and RVs. Currently, there are no vehicle storage facilities as a primary use in the town. We do, Oro Valley does offer vehicle storage services at storage facilities. So here on the right, we have an aerial image of one of these storage facilities where the blue outlines the self-storage use, and then the yellow boxes are denoting where vehicles are stored. So here, this additional use is considered ancillary to the primary use, which is the self-storage. So where are they allowed currently in the code right now? So here on the left, we have a table, and we found that it's a permitted use in our commercial zoning districts as well as our multifamily residential. Putting that into spatial context here, we have the map on the right. We find that it is allowed along Oracle Road, which is typically with our commercial uses, as well as parts of Tangerine. But we also see right over here in this kind of area along Tangerine in La Cañada, it's a permitted use near residential uses as well. So using researching some of the existing code, and clear this right here, and in our surrounding jurisdictions, we can find that we found that it's a permitted use for some, and it's also conditional use for others, so there's not a straight best practice. With that in mind, we used our research findings for these potential code amendments. So the first item that we have here really looks at fit and ensuring that there's a compatibility for the use here, and that it's a fit and it goes with the intensity of the land uses that surround it. So with a conditional use permit, it allows for that case-by-case review, goes to Planning and Zoning Commission, has the public participation component, and ultimately approval by town council. And so we are recommending that amending the permitted uses as shown in the table here in blue, so changing as a permitted use to a conditional use here. Building off of that first recommendation is looking at instances where vehicle storage facilities may be needed as an ancillary use to the primary. The aerial image on the right is of a commercial office center here in Tucson, where there is a designated parking area for the services, but it also has a fleet storage use as well to the side of the area. So considering that other jurisdictions not only allow it in vehicle storage facilities in commercial, it also allows in industrial uses as well. So staff is recommending to allow vehicle storage facilities in Tech Park as an ancillary use, as Tech Park is is considered an industrial use as well. Our third amendment relates to refining the development standards and really focuses on how vehicles are stored. It's really aimed to strengthen the existing code language, understanding that development standards help to ensure that good fit, maintain aesthetics, and also mitigate nuisances. Currently, vehicle storage facilities follow the outdoor storage requirements. As shown in the image to the right, it's typically a masonry wall that with a height that extends to screen what's being stored behind there. In practice, code amendments typically will present opportunities to refine the existing code language for clarity and ultimately ensuring consistent application of the zoning code. And so our third potential code amendment is to really add clarity to our outdoor storage standards right now. So in summary, we're looking to ensure compatibility and fit for vehicle storage facilities through that case-by-case review provided by the conditional use permit process, allowing vehicle storage facilities as a subordinate use in Tech Park with an ancillary use, and clarifying these development standards to consistently apply the zoning code recommendations. And so your feedback this evening will help us to draft the code language, which then will be presented as a fully drafted code amendment in public hearings to Planning and Zoning Commission and Town Council. Thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you, Ms. Chavez. We appreciate your presentation. We don't have blue cards for this item, so I'll open it up to council discussion questions. Councilmember Bowen and Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. Could we go back to the slide that shows the table? You know, in looking at this a little bit more closely, you know, I could strongly support conditional use for C1 and C2. I think that commercial neighborhood, I think, is a little bit of a stretch for me. But some of the things I'm kind of surprised to see on here, it was why, to me, a permitted use of vehicle storage in a resort district, that's just flat out a mistake in my mind. I mean, it's what kind of resort district would ever have that? So to move that down to conditional use, I think it's a mistake. I think that we should just acknowledge that it probably never even should have been a permitted use in townhouse residential and resort. And I've lived in the town long enough where we rezoned a lot of land as Tech Park not too many years ago. I don't think any of the intention was ever to use that for vehicle storage. So for me, I would, going from 1 to 6, I would say, no on 1, yes on 2, yes on 3, and for 4, 5, and 6, I don't even know why we would need to allow for that in those districts. If somebody has a vehicle storage idea, as we know from some of our recent zoning cases, there's quite a lot of C1 and C2 land in the town. And if somebody thinks they have a successful business to establish up here, I would recommend they acquire some of that land rather than us make a broad sweeping change and allow vehicle storage conditionally all over the town in so many different zoning districts. So thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
First of all, I agree with what was just stated by Council Member Bowen. I think some of these probably should not be allowed. And second of all, I have a couple of comments, but first I want to say thank you very much for bringing this and for all the work that's done on this. I feel like you guys did this in a timely fashion, and I really appreciate that, the amount of time that it took you guys to get this done and bring it back to council. I really appreciate it. And I think we're moving the right direction. So I just have a couple of comments and questions. One is about the definition of vehicles. I think this was in the earlier part, but it talks about definitions for individual vehicles, but it wasn't clear to me where commercial vehicles would fall. So it talks about the device by which a person or proper, let's see. At some point in the staff write-up that I read, it talked about individual privately owned recreational vehicles, and then it just had other vehicles. So I wasn't clear on where commercial vehicles fell in that.
Okay. Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barry. And so checking in the staff report, we do have, when we looked at other jurisdictions, there was more of a nuanced definition of vehicles to include commercial vehicles or recreational vehicles. Currently, our zoning code has a definition for recreational vehicle, and then our definition for vehicles as it stands right now is driven from the definition provided by Arizona Department of Transportation, which doesn't have the
Okay, so are you proposing a change to include commercial so that we have regular vehicles, recreational individual vehicles, and commercial?
If I may, also to better understand your question, Vice Mayor, so right now the proposal for vehicle storage facilities, it's any of these range of vehicles that you just listed. Okay, so if a standalone facility wants to commercially store, whether it's people's private vehicles or it's UPS trucks or it's any of those things currently fit under this one umbrella definition of a vehicle storage facility. So, but it's the commercial storage of all of those types.
Yeah, but here in the chart, it says, vehicles, their definition, vehicle storage facilities, recreational vehicles with a different definition. And then there isn't a separate definition for commercial vehicles.
True. That needs work. We want to flush those out. So we have those specific definitions, and the intent, though, and that's what I kind of wanted to flesh out, is that all of those types of vehicles, the way it's constructed now, and they all need to be defined, you bring up a good point, can be under this umbrella of a vehicle storage facility. So, the idea wasn't to create separate land use categories of storage vehicles depending on the type. In the use chart, because at the end of the day, regardless of whether the vehicle's big, tall, small, commercial, residential, the requirement, it's got to be behind a big wall. It's got to be entirely hidden, so you can't see it, an architecturally treated wall. So I leave that to council whether it's really worth making that distinction, because at the end of the day, it's the same net effect to someone driving by the facility.
Sure.
The idea is they can't see any of it.
Yeah, I just think if we're going to distinguish between vehicles and recreational vehicles, we should probably also add a definition for commercial vehicles because, that means 18-wheelers are under vehicles.
Right, it does.
I just feel like that's not the same thing as a car parking lot.
Okay.
And so that's one thought. And the other related thought is parking garages. One of the reasons I was bringing this forward is, in addition to the vehicle storage facilities being a permitted use, is the issue of parking garages not having a conditional use permit. I think all parking garages anywhere should be defined and should always require a conditional use permit, because you're never going to build a one-story parking garage.
True.
If you're going to build a parking garage, it's going to be tall. And if you're going to put in a tall parking garage, then it deserves, in my view, a public input process and a conditional use permit.
Okay.
So I think, so I agree with what Councilmember Bowen said about potentially, excluding vehicle storage facilities in some of those locations, but allowing them in commercial C1 and C2 areas.
Sure.
I'd like to see a definition for commercial vehicles, and I'd like to see all parking garages defined separately from vehicle storage, and all require a conditional use permit, no matter where they are.
Okay.
And my final comment was on the design of walls. I feel like we need some type of a provision to, depending on the size, to separate the massing and bulking. Because if it's really large, like a really big vehicle storage facility, and say it's a 18 feet high, we don't want just this wall.
No, you don't. You don't.
So if it's a small one, then that works, you know, in an area. But let's say it was like a really big one.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like we would need some kind of provision to help with that screening requirement so it doesn't just look like a massive sidewall of a square building.
Very good. Great comments. And if I may, Mayor, Vice Mayor, I'd like to go back to the concept of striking permissions to have a permitted or a conditional use permit and categories. So
can you bring that slide up just so we can?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I had the same exact reaction that Councilmember Bowen and Vice Mayor did in terms of those residential zoning districts, and that was my first response, was to want to strike those. Why are those there? It's always been there. The challenge is that presents us with the downzoning. To completely eliminate the permitted label and not allowing it in those is something that I would strongly encourage that you discuss with town legal, and whether or not it constitutes a downzoning. So that's an analysis that needs to happen. Relative to the principle of whether it's compatible, staff agrees that it's not compatible. But we have a challenge there, and it's a legal one, and that's one that I would request that you have further discussions with the town attorney's office. Thank you.
Okay, I've got Mr. Melcher. Did you want to speak to
yes,
Councilmember
Solomon?
I
appreciate the opportunity for a second. The only consideration that I would bring forth for the resort district is for vehicle storage. Oftentimes, resort participants might need vehicle storage off-site so as not to take up the primary parking for the resort. So if I'm a participant and I'm bringing in a boat or a recreational vehicle that has a tow behind, that's typically the allowed use for the resort as a storage area away from the primary parking. So that is a traditional use of the resort storage facilities.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the same point, and it's a legal question. If it's currently permitted and you're a landowner, you can't just take it away. They have a vested right to use that property for that permitted use. So my question to legal is, I'm assuming we can't just take that away without repercussions.
Underneath ARS 12-1134, there's repercussions for potentially downzoning, but to remove a permitted use would raise some questions about potential elimination of value, but we would have to explore that further.
Also, I would comment on parking garages. If you think about it, parking garages are something that you might want to actually encourage, because now, instead of a sea of parking, you reduce the land use by up to 400% if you have like a four-story or three-story, 300%, and it also provides shade. I mean, how many of us, when we go to a facility with a parking garage, aren't the first ones to try to find one of the levels other than the top because it's the only shade spot within several miles? So, you know, I think we need to be careful that we don't restrict parking garages to the point that we discourage them, because I think everyone would prefer to see less seas of pavement, and that can be accomplished through a parking garage.
Councilmember Nicholson. So, Mr. Rothschild, is that something that you will further investigate and then report back to council?
If council would like me to further investigate that, I'm happy to further investigate that and look at, see what other towns have done in this regard as they've looked to change requirements as it relates to land use.
Yeah, yes, please. I think the council would certainly benefit from your evaluation of that. Councilmember Nicholson and then Councilmember Bowen.
Just want to say in general terms, you know, I'm definitely more pro-business. I want to let people, you know, like enterprise cars, I want to hurt their business. I want people to have auto shops, and we want to encourage dealerships for revenue for, you know, putting in a car dealership. So, like, people that have it as a main part of business, like, I want to try and do the best I can to help them open up their business. But I think also, too, I don't want, you know, industrial areas where we might bring in a primary employer be turned into, like, an RV storage facility. But I do think that, you know, the market, if they haven't decided to put an RV storage facility, they're probably not going to do it this time, because that's like the lowest use. I imagine you'd make the least amount of income with some type of storage facility. Usually they're back up in the corner. Like the one you guys presented, it's behind my kid's dance studio. It's, you don't even see it from the main thoroughfare. But, I mean, we did have that one on Lambert that did come up to us. But, and I agree with Steve, you can't, I do believe, like, you can't really take the rights away if they already have them. But I don't want to increase the rights. I don't even know if this is part of it, but I don't want to increase the rights for people to build RV storage facilities and, you know, places where we would prefer to have a hotel or something that brings in a higher revenue for our citizens' tax money. There was another point I was going to make, but I'll pass.
Right. Okay. Councilmember Bowen?
Yes, I have a question for legal. It appears to me the premise of this item is that it's okay to consider going from a permitted use to a conditional use. But is going from a permitted use to a conditional use in the first place, is that a diminution of value?
It's not necessarily clear, and so I would need to go back and look at that. Additionally, I believe other municipalities have gone and taken permitted uses and made them conditional uses or conditional uses without causing a diminution of value.
So we put that on the agenda and we approved it for a council discussion. It seems like the fundamental premise of this whole item is that you can do that. I see five C's coming after five P's. Are you saying at this point we're not actually sure that that's even allowable either?
Because we've seen other jurisdictions do it, we're fairly confident that we can, that you guys can go forward and do this. However, the question is always there whenever you're doing a zoning and land use stuff that you can run into a diminution of value issue.
So just so I understand the answer clearly, so what we have seen is the special case of going from a permitted use to a conditional use, and we think that that's fundamentally not an error.
That's correct.
Thank you. Those were my questions.
And if I may add, Councilmember Bowen, Mayor, it's a matter of gradient. So it's a smaller gradient of change going from a permitted to conditional use versus entirely striking it entirely. So they're very different gradients.
Well, I think we all understand that, but the
okay.
principle we're talking about is diminution and not a level of diminution, but can we, you know, take down the value? Can we reduce the value of property that's owned by
Very
someone?
Gradient.
My understanding is they own it right. with permitted uses, correct? Those five property categories that are shown with P's.
Mm-hmm.
We have landowners that have the right, as of today, to
sure.
build vehicle storage.
Correct.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay, so this was looked into a little bit before this was brought, and it was determined that conditional use that still allows for that use to exist would be okay. So I just want to answer that piece first of all. And second of all, regarding the possibility of striking it from the townhouse, it sounds like leaving it in resort district makes sense based on what Mr. Melcher said. But for many residential districts, first of all, it's probably not super important to do it because it's unlikely to come forward unless it were a parking garage, which is why parking garage should always require conditional use and should have a separate definition. However, that being said, regarding, you know, if we receive some analysis about the law here, regarding that, there is, I believe, like a two-year sort of statute on that. Mm-hmm. So let's say we went ahead and changed it, and we said we're gonna change the law, but we're gonna grandfather everybody for 2 years. Then they have their notification or whatever regarding the change of the law. So you know they have to, if they want to claim a diminution in value, they have to do it within a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. They can't just 10 years from now go, hey, 10 years ago you guys claimed my diminution in value. So it's, I don't think it's really, I think we should get the legal analysis. I'm comfortable with it being a conditional use permit because I think then we avoid that issue and we've still done something where it can have a public process, the council can take a look at it, and we avoid the issue entirely. So I'm comfortable with what's being proposed, but if there is legal analysis, I think it should look at realistically, you know, there's only a two-year statute here. At least that's my understanding. So anyway, I'd like to get more information on that if we were going to strike something. Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon.
Just for the record, I am not comfortable with that. I'm never comfortable with government taking away private property rights from its residents.
Thank you, Councilmember Solomon. Councilmember Nicholson.
And this is a question for Nathan. So if we did do the conditional use, and I apologize, my brain has been kind of mush so from last agenda item, but if we did to go to conditional use, then if someone brought something to us and, you know, it was going to be a loss, you're like, hey, you took this away, you would bring that to council, and then we could decide pretty quickly without having to go to a lawsuit, be like, oh, yeah, let's just go ahead and let them do that without...
There's a procedure under the statute for bringing a claim, and if, as I understand the statute, there's a 90-day window before a claim can be brought where the town can correct the land use if it so desires. Additionally, it's as I understand the statute, it's 3 years from the change of the land use change. Additionally, the claim to bring underneath the statute runs with the land, and it has to do with when the person acquires the land. So there's a number of statutory procedures that go with bringing such a claim. And once again, when switching from a permitted to a conditional use, at least based on what other municipalities have done, it appears as though it does not create a claim.
Okay, so as I understand it, if we go into conditional use, there's 3 years where they could complain about it or, you know, attempt to sue, appeal it, and then, you know, we could go to, like, executive session and go through the process of that, and then I would imagine most likely most cities and towns just say, okay, let's just give it to this for a lawsuit generally.
Correct. There's a series of procedures that we would follow in that case.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Nathan.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Looking at the different commercial districts here, right now you're, and help me out with this, are the permitted use is for any type of vehicle?
Correct. Our terminology currently is very expansive in terms of what a vehicle is. So, and the rationale behind that, again, is that whether it's a trailer, an RV, a large truck, or a small truck, is that the design standard is that it has to be behind a wall that's at least as tall as whatever's being stored, okay, so you can't see it. And that wall is subject to design standards to achieve what Vice Mayor Barrett was describing, that it's just not a big blank wall.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
So And that's why it is more permissive relative to type of vehicle, because at the end of the day, you're not going to see it, whether it's a boat or a truck.
So for it to go to conditional use?
So with the idea as proposed to go to a conditional use, that gives council full discretion to review exactly what's being proposed on a case-by-case basis, on a site-specific basis.
Mm-hmm.
And you can ask questions. Well, hey, you know, is it tucked away from Oracle so you can't see it? Well, then it's fine. But if it's, well, even with a big wall, it's still right in the middle of a busy shopping center, is that appropriate? Probably not. So that gives you the ability to decide on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
So.
Nathan, can you get back to us real soon on that? Okay. Thanks.
Sure.
I understand.
You're welcome.
I'm curious, by our La Posada, I mean, that's the only parking garage that I can think of in the town of Oro Valley. Is there another parking garage?
I don't think so, Mayor. That is it. As you know, it was envisioned at one time in Oro Valley Marketplace.
Yeah.
Didn't come to fruition.
And so La Posada, where would it fall in these?
Where would it fall in these? So that is a planned area development with its own unique standards allowing for storage. Typically, that is in the realm of the resort district, R4, in terms of the most similar. But again, that's a very specific PAD that accommodated that use. So it doesn't apply well.
So in general, I'm in agreement about, I mean, I don't, you know, there may be a place in time where a parking garage is appropriate, but I do think a conditional use permit is important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As part of that. And until we get this legal analysis from Nathan, I'm in agreement with what has been presented and discussed here by council.
Very helpful.
Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Ms. Chavez, for your presentation this evening and responding to questions. Spire, thank you for being here this evening. We'll adjourn the study session.